Name is Mud. You're listening to the Ryan Mud Show at the intersection of where faith and sports collide. Get ready for an exciting hour-long journey into faith stories and sports right here in Nashville. The Ryan Mud Show. Slinging it to you every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. only on WNSR 560 a.m. or 95.9 FM. And remember, his name is Mud.
Welcome into the huddle. This is Ryan Mud, the Ryan Mud Show, and it's at the intersection of faith and sports. We have on a legendary play-by-play voice for the Nashville Predators, Pete Weber. Pete, welcome in.
Thank you very much, Ryan. Appreciate it.
So let me ask the first question. This is the most important one, I think. When did you know you had a life calling on your heart to be a sports broadcaster?
I think it starts when I'm a kid and I got that Zenith radio on my nightstand and I'm going across, at that point in time, to give you an idea of how darn old I am, all the sports were on 50,000-watt clear channel stations, and I grew up in the Midwest, so I was on Camo X in St. Louis. I was on WJR in Detroit, WGN in Chicago, WMAQ in Chicago, WTMJ in Milwaukee, WCCO coming out of the Twin Cities in Minnesota, and WBAP, for that matter, in Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. And I heard these guys having a great time. Shortly thereafter, I must have been 9 or 10 years old at the time, I found out they got paid to do what they were doing at that point in time. So I thought, if I can possibly pursue this, that's what I want to do. And it sure, Ryan, as I would say, it sure beats working.
Now, I've heard the story with you when you went to Notre Dame and you told your parents you wanted to major in communications. And they were like, you're going to Notre Dame to do communications? What was your answer to that?
Well, absolutely, I do. And that was, and it really, that wasn't even an undergraduate offered major. It was only a grad school major there. So it kind of confused my father, who was an engineering grad from there, that I would go into such a thing. But Dad, I don't even know how to use your slide rule. I mean, let's be honest here.
Now let's talk a little Preds. Now I'm a first generation Preds fan. And okay. I go back to day one, and I tried to get a ticket with my dad to get into the first game, and we couldn't get in, so we went home and watched it on TV, and it was amazing, and I've been hooked ever since. There's one thing that I miss the most is the Detroit Red Wings rivalries.
Yes.
The game
that was huge.
It was awesome. Like, The brawl game, I can't remember what year it was, but the one where there was blood everywhere on the ice and there was fights. Yeah. Do you remember what year that was?
Well, actually, I can't nail it down to just one year. There were a number of games like that. And there was one night, excuse me, where Chris Chelios was chasing very young Scott Hartnell. So Scott Hartnell would have been like year three, year four, all over the ice, trying to get at him for something. And that, I think that was also the time when Steve Yzerman got ejected, and when he slammed the door of the penalty box, the glass broke. So that was a wild, wild night, to be certain.
Now, tell me, what have been the highest highs and the lowest lows for the Predators in your career?
Highest high, going to the Cup Final, without any question, in 2017. But there was also all those first and done exits from the playoffs that preceded that. And when finally winning a playoff series in 2011 against the Anaheim Ducks, that was a big high. And then in 2016, the triple overtime game against San Jose that Mike Fisher ended at 1:05 in the morning, that definitely was a high. But I'd have to say the first ever victory, game number two against the Carolina Hurricanes, October 13th, 1998, that was a thrill, a big time thrill.
What about the lows? I mean, we've definitely gone through some lows. What have been the low points during your career?
There was one night in Detroit, or rather in Philadelphia, where Thomas Vokoun had, at that point, he was a youngster for the Predators, but he'd only played one NHL period for the Montreal Canadiens before he came to Nashville. And in that one, he gave up four goals in Philadelphia. All of a sudden, he's the goaltender, as it turns out, against the Flyers in Philly, and he gave up four goals again. That was a definite low. But the highs, in my mind, even though currently there have not been that many, overbalance the lows.
Pete Charlie here, and I definitely want to say I was there to witness most of the highs and the lows. I've been there for a lot of these moments. And yep. I wanted to go back to the broadcasting component of things for just a second. Pete, since the day you first arrived in Nashville, you have always been a leading voice in helping those that have the passion, that have the fire, that want to do something around this business. You had that fire in yourself, and I think that you've utilized your position and your place in the industry to help others that have that same thing. And Ryan asked me to relate and share a quick story about you and I from the past. And I will make it quickly, as verbose as I can be and as much as I can take time. I just want to tell everybody this. Pete's not just a Hall of Fame broadcaster. He is a world-class human being. When I first arrived in Nashville in early 2002, I had come to Nashville specifically to try to get into covering the Nashville Predators and covering hockey. Back then, you used to be able to go down to the event level after the games and seek autographs. But Pete, as you know, I wasn't down there seeking autographs. I was looking for media members. So media member number one, not named here, turns his nose up and laughs at me and walks off. Maybe he was the smartest of us. Media member number two looks at me and goes, kid, you don't want anything to do with this stuff. Get out of here. Media member number three just walks right on by and doesn't even acknowledge me. Four, five, six do the same. And then I see this gentleman that I recognize from upstate New York coming down the hallway, and I go, Pete. He goes, oh, hey, yeah. Oh, yes, yes, sir. Yes, what can I do for you? And Pete stops, and he talks to me for a second. I give him the same spiel I've tried to give everybody else. And I just got to town. You know, I'm brand new. I want to get into sports coverage. What do I do? And Pete, after an entire day of work, which I had no idea at that time how many hours that was, I realize now just how much I was putting Pete out at the moment. But here comes Pete after the game, stops, and he thinks for about 10 seconds. He goes, I know. He goes, here's this phone number. Call this guy tomorrow. Tell him I gave you his number, and see if it helps you out any. The next day, I had my first internship here in Nashville radio at 106.7 The Fan with Jonathan Schaefer. And since then, Pete, my entire career has taken off. I'm going to ask you for another favor at some point down the road, but I'm still trying to pay you back for that one. But Pete, you have, since the day you first arrived here, helped men and women like myself that have the fire, the fury, and the passion for the broadcasting industry get their starts. You've mentored us. You've helped us along the way. And I've got to tell you, Pete, the broadcasting tree that you are going to leave behind, I think, is full of incredible people. And once again, I know I've done this many times on the airwaves, I just want to thank you for how you have helped us and handled us. And there are, for real, Pete, generations of fantastic young broadcasters that all call you mentor and all thank you for the same thing. So, Pete, I don't know if I have a question in that at all, but I just wanted to say thank you again for what you've done for the young broadcasters that have the passion. If not for you, many of us would never have gotten a start.
I second that, Pete. Like, the legacy you have left is absolutely amazing, the legacy you've left.
Well, thank you. But, guys, I don't want to do a legacy yet. I want to just keep on doing this.
I understand that completely.
Yeah.
I do, too. That's why I'm still here trucking away every day. So I do appreciate you helping us get us started. And you just let us know where we can help you down the road.
Well, you might have to help another youngster. That's the deal. That's the pay it forward.
I will. 100% guaranteed.
Now, I got to say that you do a better job more than any other radio announcers in painting the picture for blind people. And our good friend Luther King loves you to death because you paint that picture for him, and that's why he loves listening to your broadcast. So talk about where you learned to paint the picture for people on the radio.
All right. That basically was during my time in Southern California. There was a guy there who was the master, Vin Scully, voice of the Dodgers. He only lasted 67 years. I wish he could have lasted longer. But he was the guy who said, you got to consider when you're doing radio that you have a blank canvas, you have a whole palette of paints and colors, and then it is your job to fill in the blanks to every extent you possibly can. And it was Vin Scully, who I think was the master of us all.
Now, can you name some of your favorite influence broadcasting proteges, ones you looked up to growing up?
Oh, yeah, without question. Matter of fact, I did a show on him on Sirius Radio a couple months ago on Harry Carey. It was listening to Harry Carey as a kid who inspired me to pursue this business. And he was as unique an individual as you could possibly imagine. He just went after the business with full enthusiasm. And, you know, the whole idea that he ended up singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game, and that started at Comiskey Park in Chicago in 1971, and got a little bit surprised when Bill Veeck hid a public address mic in the booth, was a big part of that. But Harry Carey, Jack Buck, his partner, Joe Garagiola, whose son was later my sports director at the campus station at Notre Dame, guys like that. Jack Lloyd and Vince Lloyd and Jack Quinlan. And then when I think about Lloyd Pettit, he was the voice of the Chicago Blackhawks when I was growing up. And what a treat it was, because he owned the Milwaukee Admirals for many, many years. Predators joined the NHL, their farm club, the then International Hockey League, Milwaukee Admirals. And who did I get to spend time with at training camp, trading some stories, though I got much more than he did from me, Lloyd Pettit.
Now, I was raised a Notre Dame football fan growing up until I went to MTSU, and I became an MTSU fan, but I still root for Notre Dame.
It was a fun Saturday night, wasn't it?
Oh, it was awesome. It was amazing. They need to keep that rivalry for Southern Cal. And Southern Cal, they're a bunch of cowards. They don't want to play Notre Dame. And I'm like, this is a rivalry. This is what you got to keep.
Yes.
But did you ever know
back to 1926, Ryan. That's why we got to keep it.
Oh, yeah. Did you ever know the name Tim Priester?
Oh, yeah.
Tim was awesome, and my love for sports and reading the Blue and Gold magazine.
Yeah.
And that's where I really found a love for sports writing and sports broadcasting was Tim Priester, for sure.
Yep. And I was – when I grew up in Illinois, we had 5 newspapers delivered to the house every day. I don't think anybody growing up now is going to be able to say that because, number one, the newspapers unfortunately have gone by the by. And that is, I think, was the basis for me really getting into this, the listening and then the reading, because the reading gave me the knowledge to go forward.
I like what Lou Somogyi always – I called him up one day at the office in South Bend. I'm like, Lou, I want to get into broadcasting and I want to get into writing. And he's like, you got to do one thing for me. Read.
Yes.
And he's like, if you just read articles, you will become consumed with the sports industry and you will want to write and get into the industry. And Lou was awesome. He passed away a couple years ago.
Right.
And Lou Somogyi was an influence of mine also.
Not easy to read so much nowadays. We have to get out our tablets and read off the internet rather than have that piece of paper in our hands.
Now, have you gotten a chance to go back to South Bend at all and go see a game?
I go back usually to the first home game every year. I was at the Texas A&M game. Disappointing end to that one, to be certain. And I've gone twice to Dublin when they have played Navy over there. So, yeah, I've been a pretty regular attendee. But with my hockey obligations, it's been almost mandatory that I always go to the first home game of the year, and then that's it. But you know who I run into there most of the time? The voice of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Joe Bowen, who is a big member of the Subway alumni.
Okay. Did you ever run into Don Criqui at all?
Oh, yeah. Don was in my brother's class.
Okay.
And I have a picture up in the broadcast booth with Don Criqui from several years ago, along with Joe Bowen. We were both up there with him.
Now, Alan Pinkin, he's still the color guy for the radio side, correct?
No, no longer. Alan no longer is doing it.
Who
and
is
he
now?
He was Harrison doing quite a bit of it. They really have changed that booth up quite a bit the last few years.
Okay. I remember Alan Pinkin. Who was the other play-by-play guy that was before Don Criqui? I can't remember his name.
Tony Roberts,
he was awesome.
Like, not the actor in the Woody Allen movies, but Tony Roberts, who was the sports director of Mutual, and even was the voice for a while of the Washington Senators baseball team.
Tony Roberts, his passion for the game bled through the radio. It was amazing.
That Scott Casey game-winning field goal against Michigan, never can forget that call.
Yeah, yeah. Do you ever get on the college campuses like at MTSU and like TSU or Cumberland or, you know, maybe University?
I have. You know what I really like? I love Sewanee. I love that campus.
Okay. Do they have a broadcasting school down there?
I don't know. I just went down on a weekend and walked around.
Okay. All right.
Hey, Pete, let's bring it to where the Predators are nowadays and just get a little bit of hockey talk in before we run out of time and wrap up with you. It is somewhat breaking news here with the show that Predators number 5 overall draft pick Brady Martin has been sent back down to the OHL, back down to his junior team. Pete, right. It was, I think, and I would love to get your opinion on this, I think it was a very good experience to have the number one draft pick from the first round this past year come in, go through the experience of a full training camp, get his first few shifts in the league, be around the team, get used to the process and the protocols of the league for a couple of the weeks, and then go on with the plan of development as it looks like it is carrying out. What are your thoughts about that and how it's played out so far?
Well, he is among, without question, the youngest players in this year's draft class. His birthday, very late, very close to that September 15th cutoff eligibility to be drafted in any particular year. But I love the kid's work ethic. I think that, yes, I think he's benefited a lot from being around the guys. And now I think he knows what his target is, and he can work on that. And he will get the chance to play multiple minutes in the OHL. Who knows, he might even get traded to a team that has a chance at the Memorial Cup, which would give him even better competitive minutes. I like the youngster, but that was just one of three first-round picks the Predators had this year. So, guys, I'm hoping all of them can come through, as Brady looks like he will.
And there's been quite a bit of buzz on the other first-round players since they've gone back to their respective clubs as well. So very much looking forward to tracking the future of the prospects for this Nashville Predators hockey team. Pete, another question about the Predators on ice currently. UC Saros has had moments in the past, seasons in the past, where October has been difficult for him. This year, that is certainly not the case. In those other years, even when he's had difficult starts to the season, he typically rounds his game into shape and his numbers into such excellence that he finds himself in the top five of the final stats of the season, if not a Vezina finalist in itself. Pete, there are people who question UC Saros as being a franchise goaltender, but I do not. I look at his stats. I look at his numbers. I see where he is at age 30 compared to where Pekka Rinne was at of age 30. And frankly, UC Saros is an incredible starting goaltender for any franchise. Pete, would you just talk to me about UC Saros, what he means to this team, and how important it was for him to get off to a good start this October?
It was important for him to do so, just to erase what people were thinking after last year. And last year was just a case of the team playing very poorly, I'm going to say, not around him, but in front of him, and leaving him as, you know, that great phrase we use in hockey, leaving the goaltender out to dry. He should be pretty dry by now, because they did a heck of a job of doing that. He has played spectacularly well in the recent game against Anaheim. Those five goals against were not his fault. It was just a case of people not playing well in support of him. And so I am fully endorse what he has done here. The only difference between him and Pekka Rinne is height. And Pekka, at 6 feet five, if not stretched out a little bit more, has the advantage there.
Pete, if I may ask you just one more hockey question about the Predators, and then I want to ask you something off-ice related, another story. But
okay.
I would just like to follow up. We've talked about the goaltending. We've talked about the prospects. I'd like to move to the upfront portion of the ice. It is obvious to anybody watching right now that the Predators are offensively a little bit deficient. They haven't quite found the chemistry amongst the top six forwards yet. Jonathan Marchessault being out the last couple of games is certainly not helping. But Pete, for those out there who are starting to get worried, it typically takes at least a handful of games to develop chemistry amongst line mates and get things going, especially when a coach makes alterations and adjustments to the overall team concept and system, right?
Absolutely it does. And it's not like when I started in this league back in 1978, lines were established. You didn't juggle them at all, unless you happened to be named William Scott Bowman. And Scotty Bowman was always into juggling things. He was always doing laboratory-type experiments with his lineup. But yes, it does take a while to generate that, and to actually, it's more than generate, to create it.
Pete, one more thing from me. And with the introduction of our newest mascot to the league, Tusky, out there in Central Division rival Utah. I know that still sounds strange to some, but with the introduction of Tusky and your longstanding relationship with the one and only cat known as Nash, Pete, when it comes to mascots, has anything ever surpassed the debut of Stormy the Pig?
Stormy the Pig was without question. He was the Carolina Hurricanes mascot even before they got to Raleigh, when they were playing in their interim period of time in Greensboro. Stormy the Pig was probably the best story, and Charlie, maybe I should send you the recording of my interview with Chuck Caton about all of that, where Stormy was introduced, and when he was introduced, he was almost suffocated in a Zamboni because of dry ice in that very same compartment. And when they opened it up and said, "Ladies and gentlemen, here is your new mascot for the Carolina Hurricanes, Stormy the Pig," they flip open the Zamboni. And as the top flipped forward, all you could see were his legs trembling. He was almost out right at that point in time. So I'll tell you the story this way. He never wore that outfit again and instead has four Hurricane season tickets for life for almost losing his life on that debut performance.
Pete, no matter how many times I hear you recap and recall that story, it makes me chuckle and it makes me laugh and it makes me smile every time. And I thank you for placating me and going down that road one more time with me. Ryan, let me let you have your show back and talk to Pete for the last couple minutes. Thank you so much, Pete.
You're welcome, Charlie. Thank you.
Pete, talk about your relationship with Steve Carroll. We met him last night before the game against the Ducks last night. Talk to me about the relationship with him.
Well, that goes back to my minor league baseball days. And the first meeting, he was voice of the Iowa Cubs, and I was voice of the Buffalo Bisons. And so in that old ballpark, Sec Taylor Stadium in Des Moines, we had quite a few fun times. And then he ends up leaving the Iowa Cubs, going to Larry Schmetto's team in Huntsville. Now it's the Space City Trash Pandas down there, but it was the Huntsville Stars. He went down there, and in leaving Iowa for AA, I think he had minimally doubled, maybe tripled his salary. And then when Steve Carroll had the advantage here that it was Bob Jamison who left to go to the Angels in Anaheim, and that left an opening here, and Larry Schmidl brought him up here. And one day we were sitting around, we were in Oklahoma City simultaneously, and I told him, hey, I knew he had done a lot of junior hockey in Des Moines, and I said, there's an opening with the Philadelphia Flyers, you want to go after it? And he did, and he got it. And later on, the New Orleans Brass and the East Coast League, and now he's with the Ducks. When he first went there, they were mighty. They're not so mighty right now, but they played pretty darn well in the game to open the homestand on Tuesday night. And he is going into the Southern California Sports Broadcasters Hall of Fame coming up in January. So Steve and I go way, way back.
He was so gracious to Luther and I last night. He talked to us for probably 10 minutes before the pregame.
Good.
And just a gracious human being, just like you, like always adding value into other people. I mean, that's what I love about you, Pete. You always are helping other people get where they want to go. Where does that come
from? Thank you, Ryan. I'm glad you guys got together.
Where does that come from? Where does that want to help people get where they want to go? Where does that come from?
I wish I knew. It's just something that has me basically possessed, I guess.
All right, we got about 4 minutes. Now let's look at the Nashville.
You don't want me to sing, do you, Ryan?
You can if you want.
No, I really don't want to do that. I don't want to ruin your audience.
Now let's talk about the Vancouver game coming up.
Yes.
What's your take on that going forward?
I'm wondering about the health of Philip Hedl, the former New York Ranger, who got blindsided last weekend in a game against the Washington Capitals. Don't know if he's going to be able to play during that coming in here to Nashville. But the Vancouver Canucks and the Nashville Predators, I'm thinking about even going back to the first season. That was the year where the Predators played the pre-Christmas game in Vancouver, and Marcus Naslund was the Canucks captain. He got a penalty shot, and he came in and made such a move on goaltender Mike Dunham that he popped Dunham's groin trying to respond to that move, and he was sidelined for a good period of time, and that actually is what opened up the door for Thomas Fokun to become the Preds' number one. So the Canucks, you know, Brock Besser, gotta love that guy. And certainly watching Quinn Hughes on the blue line is really something special. He is highly creative.
Now, I'm a big believer in this. If Bruno doesn't work out, can you see Barry Trotz being the GM and the coach at the same time?
No, I think he is too sane for that. Okay. So I don't think he would do that.
Okay. I still think the Bruno experience, I still think it's going to work out anyways. But I always thought Barry would be good back in the seat, back in the coaching seat, if he ever had a chance to get back into it here in Nashville.
If he had to, perhaps. But I don't think that they would force him to do that.
Okay. Now we have the Lightning coming up. Who's after the Canucks game?
The Canucks game, the L.A. Kings, who are struggling as well, that will be Saturday.
Okay.
And then it's a back-to-back with a Sunday game with the Dallas Stars. And then the Lightning close out the five-game homestand next Tuesday.
Okay. And how can people get tickets?
I would just say to go on NashvillePredators.com/tickets, and you're set up in that regard.
And how can people follow you on the socials?
I'm just at Pete Weber Sports on X now. I have a difficult time referring to it that way. It still is Twitter to me, but that's the way they keep up with me.
Thank you, Pete. Thanks a bunch for your time.
Ryan, thanks for asking. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Pete.
Truly a Nashville broadcaster, a broadcasting legend, far beyond Nashville, but here within the city of Nashville, one of the most beloved people that's ever talked on a microphone. And he's an amazing human being, and I'm so glad that he was on the show this afternoon, and I'm so glad that we were able to talk to him for a few minutes there.
He is a super, super human being. Like, he gets people. Like, he really wants to help people get where they want to go, and he gets out of the way and then just shares a connection, shares an idea, shares a meal with someone like he did with me at Scoreboard, you know, up with Kevin White and getting his book and everything. Pete is awesome. Like, him and Terry are legendary. They need to be put in the Hall of Fame, the NHL Hall of Fame, if you ask me.
I love both of them very much, and I appreciate the time that I've got to spend around them as a person and as a professional. I've learned a lot from them, and Crispy, that's a guy you probably won't be able to catch because he's busy living life with the grandkids and being retired, so he doesn't do a whole lot of media anymore. But, man, Terry Crisp, if you can ever get him on to tell some stories, that is a one fabulous way to go. But that was a really, really fun way to start the show today.
Pete's got so many stories, it's not even funny. This segment was brought to you by Jessica Knighter Benchmark Realty. Her number is 615-521-5944. You can call her at 615-521-5944. We'll be right back right after this with Joe Blair and TSSAA. Welcome back into the huddle at the intersection of faith and sports. My name is Ryan Mudd, along with Crazy Charlie. Let's welcome in Joe Blair with TWSAA. Joe, how are you?
I'm doing well, Ryan. How you doing, my man?
Doing well, sir. All right, the biggest need in TWSAA these days is officials for basketball, football, and baseball, and softball, along with volleyball also. So how can people get a hold of TWSAA to, if they want to get involved and be a referee, umpire, official? How do they do that?
Yeah, so I'm going to add a couple more sports to that as well. We've got officials in just about every sport that we need, wrestling, lacrosse, boys and girls lacrosse. I mean, just about every sport that we offer, that we use officials on a regular basis, there's a need for it. And there's a couple of different things that we are doing to try and meet that need. There's a program that we've partnered with called Ref Reps, and it's actually a school-based program that they offer classes that you actually can get PE credit for towards graduation in high schools. A lot of times they work it into a PE class or something like that, and you can get high school credit for participating in that program if the school participates in it. And basically, it's teaching you fundamental officiating. It gets sports specific to a degree, but it teaches you this is how you go about managing a game, which is a big thing with officials. These are the things you point on, and it will get into like specifically football, basketball, baseball, softball. That program is adding sports as it goes along. So that's one thing that we do. But if you go to our website, anyone can go to our website at tssaa.org. And when you get to that website, there's a tab called Contest Officials. And if you click on Contest Officials, under General Information, it's going to talk about officials registration. And there's a link in there. Anyone can go in and register to become an official. There is a process to go through. There is a fee to pay for becoming an official. Part of that fee does involve a background check. Officials have to pass a background check with us to be able to officiate. And then they also receive, once that background check's cleared, everything's checked out registration-wise, they'll get their rule book. They'll get assigned, or they'll choose an association that they wish to affiliate with. There's a lot of local associations across the state, and each association has an assigner. With that association, that assigner's responsibility is to help with the training of officials. They meet regularly throughout the season. We have fans that a lot of times claim that officials don't know the rule book or anything like that. They actually spend a decent amount of time in the rule book, because at these regular meetings, they're going over different scenarios that have either come up or rule interpretations that have come down from the NFHS that we provided them. They're going through that rule book, and they're talking about situations, and this is how we're going to interpret it, and this is how it's going to be handled. They do that pretty regularly throughout the season, and even in some cases outside of the season, they'll still meet periodically as an association. So there's an infrastructure there. We need people to want to be willing to help out, and we really encourage. Obviously, if you're coming out of high school, going to college, you played a sport, and you want to get back to that sport in some way, maybe even make a little money on the side when you're in college. Officiating is a great way to do that, and go about doing that. We can help. We've helped a lot of college kids get connected with the local association at their school that they're going to, and get them involved. But we also are looking for those people that maybe their kids have graduated from high school, they're in college now, but they love the sport, they love being involved with the sport that their kids played in or that they played in themselves, and they want to give back in some way. And we really like to have those people as well, because there may not be an experience level as far as officials goes, but there is an experience level as far as just dealing with people in general. and having those people skills that you kind of naturally sort of gain as you live your adult life. So we really want those people as well. So we're open to anybody wanting to come apart and be a part of that, and we're willing to help out as much as we possibly can with that.
It's a great side job. Like, I did it in college with Doris Armstrong for baseball, and Doris is still doing it to this day. And, I mean, to say that the officials don't know the rules, that is one of the biggest lies you can tell yourself, because, like, they are reading the rule book every day, and it's night and day of how good the officials are these days, if you ask me.
We had a lot of, at least in my experience, my sports, I oversee wrestling and boys and girls soccer and boys lacrosse. And my experience with working with the supervising officials and assigning officers in those sports has been nothing but positive. I mean, we've got a lot of good people that are helping us out. And they want to run their associations right and want to make sure they're doing the job right, doing the sport right. So they work hard to make sure that they're doing their part, and like you said, they want to make sure they get things as right as they possibly can. And if there is a time where someone makes a bad call, that's going to happen. Listen, that's happened forever, and it's going to continue to happen. There's going to be bad calls that are made. I mean, that's just the nature of being human. But when that does occur, They take it as a learning opportunity. They get with the official, they talk it over. Hey, here's what we're looking at. Maybe next time we got to be thinking about this. Is it a mistake? Yeah, it's a mistake. That happens. Coaches are making just as many mistakes during a game, and I don't see very many officials running over and screaming at the coaches for making them a bad decision during a game. But, you know, It works both ways. Definitely is something that we're just human. That's just how we are. And so grace plays a big part in being a sports fan, I believe, and a coach too. You got to have some grace for everybody involved, not just officials, but your athletes and parents too. So that's a big part of it.
Now, do you know how much? Football pay, just out of curiosity, how much do football officials get paid? Do you know that?
Let me look it up real quick. It's different for all sports.
Correct.
Right now, for football, game fees for football, I believe, is $120 per official per game.
That's amazing.
That's at the varsity level. That's not either. That's not a JV or a freshman level. Those levels are negotiated by the local association for a JV or freshman game.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't make $120 on a night for high school football, and you still get to stay in shape, you still get to be around kids, you still get to be around the game, this is a win-win. If you're out there and you have a calling to be an official, TSSAA is where it's at, if you ask me.
Yeah, no, We really depend on officials. We have to have officials. We have to have them. good people. If you're a good person to begin with, and you want to make sure you're working hard to do things the right way, that's definitely a plus as well as far as just being an official. The training is there. The opportunities to learn are always there. We have a lot of good people that work with us to help us. We say officials for us, the TSSAA, it's not like we have like a back room where we keep all our officials locked up and then when there's a time for a game, we unlock them and go, okay, go call the game. They're independent contractors to us. They're living their lives. We depend on the associations to have officials and be able to assign the games, and we're heavily dependent upon them and the people that are in their association to call those games. So we have to make sure we're doing our part to help them, and they're doing their part to help us too.
Now, I've got to give you a compliment, Joe. We go way back to our Brentwood High days as you were the wrestling coach there. And if there was one thing that I loved about Joe Blair, was he was a gentle giant. You were so gentle with the athletes that your example spoke so loud for the athletes and the parents. And if I can have one trait from Joe Blair, it's the gentleness in his heart.
Well, I appreciate that, Ryan. That means a lot coming from you. It really does. There might have been a couple of wrestling practices over the years where my wrestlers might have disagreed with you a little bit on that gentle part, but that's okay. You know, but I appreciate that. I never thought of it that way before, but thank you for saying that.
Now, we got a couple big ball games this week off the TWSWA website. Richland at Moore County, Sycamore at Cheatham County, Granger at Seymour, and Independence at Summit. Kind of talk about the Independence at Summit game. That's really been a huge game for a playoff-wise for the team to, you know, pedestal into the playoffs and get further, you know, down the road.
Yeah. Well, we're getting down to the nitty-gritty on football season and those teams that are qualifying for playoffs. I mean, there's a lot of different scenarios that are popping up for sure. And you know, Independence and Summit, just that in and of itself, it's a rivalry game. They're right next door to each other pretty much. So that's a big deal just for them. There's a lot that plays into that game. And then, of course, there's just other things that are riding on it right now, you know, with where everybody stands in the region. Independence is kind of right on that bubble of do I get in the playoffs? Do I get that? They're sitting right down in that fourth place spot, but Summit's right there, right underneath them in the fifth place spot in the region. So that's going to be a big game. It's going to play a big part into what happens as things play out. But then Independence has to turn around, and also they got to play Brentwood as well, and that's going to be another big game for them, for both schools, Brentwood and Independence. Brentwood still has to play Ravenwood as well. Ravenwood right now, I mean, they're the top of the class in that region right now. They're having a great season, so that's going to be a tough game. But you know, it's anything can happen on any given Friday night, and it depends on what teams show up. So it's going to be fun to watch.
Now, I'm a Williamson County guy, so I've seen the change in the demographics over the years. Like, it used to be just Brentwood and Franklin. Now you got Ravenwood, Page, Centennial, Independence, Summit, Nolensville. Like, all the neighborhood schools are they're now, you know, branched out all over the county. Talk about how all those schools are so good these days because of the high school coaches.
Well, and the coaching is very deep in that county. And I can just kind of speak to that because I was a part of that as well. And you're right. I mean, when I first came to Brentwood in the late 90s, it was really just it was Brentwood, Franklin. Centennial had just opened when I started at Brentwood High. Page was there, and then Fairview, but you know, for wrestling wise, at the time when I started, Fairview didn't have a wrestling program. They do now. It's a good little program they have out there. But then as the county grew, as they started adding schools, you know, I remember when Ravenwood opened, and the effect that it had on Brentwood. We went from having two middle schools, Woodland and Brentwood Middle, feeding into Brentwood High School, to we lost one of those middle schools, and we actually lost a percentage of our student body as well to Ravenwood. That happens. I mean, if there's rezoning, that's just a part of it, part of that growth. But it's just it really is amazing what's happened is the quality and the care that the schools have put into not just their athletic programs, but just in their programs in general, their fine arts programs, their academic programs. I mean, it's really a neat thing to look at as far as just the whole district itself. But you're right. I mean, there's tons of depth, and the competition level and across the board in a lot of sports in Williamson County is it's pretty tough. There's very few sports where you're not seeing, you know, your district schedule alone or your region schedule depending on the sport. Just making it out of that, and being finished in the top of the district, you've really done something.
Now, it's a faith in sports show. Tell me what scripture is speaking to you right now.
Well, I'll tell you what, this is getting to be beginning of my crazy time of year. I've got next week I'll be in Chattanooga for girls soccer state championships. Wrestling season starting up, practices officially begin next week. So those are both my sports that I'm overseeing. And there's just a lot that goes into getting everything ready and getting those sports ready and everything like that, and just everything else that culminates. And a big thing that I've been dealing with the past couple of weeks is worry. And just, am I missing something? Is something not getting done? Am I starting to get piled up and stuff? I'm just starting to feel a little anxious and things like that. And so I've been really relying heavily on Philippians 4:6-7. Don't worry about anything. And it says, the big thing I get of that is it says don't worry about anything, instead pray about everything. But it doesn't say don't ignore it. It just says don't worry and just don't ignore it. It doesn't say that. Worry is the action in that verse. Don't worry about anything. Well, you remove that worry action, and God's giving you the answer right after that to replace that worry action word with a different action word, and that different action word is pray. So don't worry about anything. Instead, take that worry out and replace it with prayer. And praying that, you know, I don't have all the answers that I need to have right this very moment, but praying to God that He's going to provide for me what I need when I need it. And along with that verse 7, and, you know, it continues in verse 6, tell God what you need and thank Him for all that He has done. And He has done so much for us in all of our lives and blessed us with so many things. But then in verse 7, here comes that promise of doing your part of verse 6. Then you'll receive and experience God's peace, which exceeds anything we can understand. And His peace will guard your heart and mind as you live in Christ Jesus. So that peace that you receive from God, it exceeds anything we can understand. It's a peace that's going to help you just calm down and start seeing clearly, this is what I need to do now. This is how God's going to guide me through this next little thing. That worry's not there anymore, because God's showing me now that path that I'm going to have to take to get to what I need to get the things done that I need to get done, or to get through what I'm about to get through. That peace is going to guard my heart. It's going to take away that anxiety, that stress that I feel. It's going to guard my mind. So the lies that Satan is putting into my mind of I'm not good enough, I'm not doing a good enough job, I'm forgetting this, I'm forgetting that, I can't do the things that doubt and that lack of confidence that Satan brings in, that peace of God is going to just destroy all of that and just replace it with just His fullness and His goodness. And I've been really relying heavily on that, because this is a pretty stressful time of year for me. And it's going to have, I have different stressful times as the school year goes on. This is a good one for me right now. I'm really leaning on it heavily.
All right, how can people get a hold of TSSAA Subway again if they want to be an official?
So you're going to go to tssaa.org, and you're going to click on the Contest Officials tab. And once you get to that Contest Officials page, then you're going to start looking for the officials registration under General Information, and it's going to walk you right through it.
Sounds good. Can people follow you on the socials anywhere?
I'm not really a big social media guy. I was for a while, and I'm just like, you know what? I need to start making things in my life a little bit simpler, and social media is one of them. So I'm really not on social media that much.
I got you. All right. Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it.
No problem, Ryan. Anytime. Appreciate you, man.
All right. Take care, buddy. Thank you. All right, we will be right back right after this, and we'll have a little roundtable with Charlie and I on the Ryan Mudd Show. Welcome back into the huddle. This is the Ryan Mudd Show along with Crazy Charlie. Charlie, Diego Pavia.
Yes.
Heisman Trophy finalist for sure. He's got to be in New York. What do you think?
The world is all available to Pavia and Vanderbilt right now. If they continue winning the way they're winning, they continue getting the performances they're getting, then Heisman finalist, yes. College football playoff, very much possible. SEC championship game, not out of the question. Vanderbilt has the world in front of them after beating LSU. If the team continues winning, Pavia continues being the difference maker, and that team's only loss this season is to Alabama in Tuscaloosa, well, then they're going to be pushed forward into the playoff pool without a doubt. It's all there for them. It's all there.
College game day is going to be there.
Right.
Missouri's a tough team. I mean, they're not a slouch. They're not a rollover. They still have to play Missouri, so we'll see how that goes. Are you going to go to game day?
I'm probably going to stop by for a little bit. I'm very happy to see that it's on campus. I was very disappointed when I heard a lot of discourse that people wanted it to be down on Broadway. Broadway is not Vanderbilt. That's downtown. Midtown is where Vanderbilt is. Mud, what I would have loved to have seen, and it might have taken more time to plan than, you know, College game day just announced a couple days ago they were coming. This, my idea, might have been something you needed 6 months at least to plan. I would have loved to have seen them do it over at Centennial Park.
Oh, it'd be awesome.
I would love to see the stage set up at the front of Centennial Park, closer to West End Avenue, the crowd behind them, and the Parthenon as the backdrop to the whole thing. It's one of the most unique and neat features of our city, and I know they're going to showcase the whole area. They always do. They'll have cameras all over Vanderbilt and West End, but I do wish they could have utilized Centennial Park and the Parthenon for game day, because when you're looking for grandiose backdrops, unique settings, and a place that you can put a crowd that's going to be absolutely hyped, Centennial Park is the place for it. I would have loved to have done it, but a close second to that for me is it being on campus. I think that is very important.
Yeah, I'm going to try to make game day. I've been to one game day before, Notre Dame and Georgia Tech, about 15 years ago. It was awesome. It was at Georgia Tech, and it was awesome. I got to be on camera. They put me on camera. I got to be on TV.
So, I got to be a part of the alternate game day, the SEC Network version of it. They came to Nashville a couple of times in their first season, I believe. And as part of the Bill King show, they invited us out to come and, you know, hang out and talk to some of the broadcasters and some of the producers behind the scenes. We were all, you know, it's a very tight-knit community once you get involved in the broadcasting world, and Bill King is always invited when it comes to college football stuff. So it's always fun. It's always great to have the city highlighted, featured, and showcased. They do it in a good and positive way. They're not coming here to look for the dirty part of the city. They're not coming here to talk down about it. They're looking to hype it up, and it's great for Nashville. It's great for Vanderbilt. I'm so happy to be a part of it, because outside of Nashville SC, our professional sports landscape right now is not bringing a lot of great feelings and positivity. There's always hope for turnarounds, but right now the Titans and the Predators are not playing very well at all. Nashville SC, thankfully, is, and Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt has given us that one thread to pull on here locally, that we have something that's a lot of fun to get behind and watch. And if you're historically not a Vanderbilt fan, you typically watch them lose and you laugh about it. You like the two win seasons. Listen, just get out of the way for one season. Clark Lee said he was going to get them there. You laughed at him. He's proven every one of you wrong. Pavia has proven every one of you wrong. He hits a Heisman pose and you laugh about it. You think, no way. Well, it's all wide open for Vanderbilt right now. Clark Lee was right at the podium on day one when he said, we're going to make this a championship program. And Pavia is the guy that's going to take him there, and he's going to do it on the strength of that swag and confidence and those legs underneath him that carried him away from that LSU defensive rush time after time after time.
Now, let's get into the Vols talk. The Vols have Kentucky at Kentucky this week. Kentucky had a chance to beat Texas if they would just gone for a quarterback sneak. And they ran the ball four times on the goal line in overtime. I'm like, you should run a quarterback sneak, for crying out loud. And I think that game is going to be tough for Tennessee. Kentucky is a good football team. We're going to find out and Tennessee's going to be tested these next couple weeks. They've got to beat Kentucky for sure. Kentucky's going to be tough.
Oh, absolutely. And listen, you worry about a hangover, okay? The loss to Georgia, close loss. You had your opportunities. You should have won, but you didn't. Tuscaloosa was a dramatically different story. You did things down in Tuscaloosa that, frankly, any SEC team would have lost. You throw an interception on the goal line that goes 99 yards. That limp pass from Aguilar in the SEC, that's picked off 100 out of 100 times in return for a touchdown, just as it was. Those are SEC defensive backs. Those aren't just some randos at the park that you could just look to your right and be like, oh, there's my guy. I'll just toss it over there lightly. And no, every time it's going to go the other way. I hope a lesson was learned. You have to play the game hard. You have to play it crisp, and you can take nothing for granted. Being on the one-yard line, you just mentioned two different scenarios, two different games where a team on the one-yard line failed to get the ball in when they should have. For the Vols, I hope they rebound and I hope they bounce back, but I'm worried about a hangover after the Alabama game. I'm worried about the number of injuries that they seem to have right now, and I just hope that they can keep their confidence going forward because they could still end up with a very good season. If you're a two-loss team and your two losses are to Alabama in Tuscaloosa and Georgia, unfortunately, at home, that's not that bad, especially if you get to the end of the season and you beat a top 10 Vanderbilt team.
They could ruin Vanderbilt's chances, you know, for the Heisman hopeful.
They could ruin Vanderbilt's chances for almost anything.
Yeah.
They could, and that should be a motivation for them. You're in-state rival. You should always want to knock them back down a peg. But I am worried about Tennessee having somewhat of a hangover from the Alabama game.
Do you think they need to make a defensive coordinator change? There's talk that the defensive coordinator needs to be let go and then bring someone in, you know, that's, you know, more
Ed Orgeron? I'm just kidding. I just know you like to say that.
He could be an option.
He could be. I don't know if we're there yet, but I do know that the defense has been subpar as of late. The defense was coming out of fall camp. We were told the defense was going to be mayhem. We were told that they were going to be misfits. We were told that they were going to be game changers. And where is it? I'm not seeing it. I'm seeing other teams around the SEC. I'm seeing them be dominant. I'm seeing them be violent. I'm seeing them be physical. I'm not seeing it from Tennessee as much as I thought that I would this year. I don't know if it's quite time to change a coordinator, but it is time to light a fire under that unit.
All right, we got the quote of the day. It comes from Bobby Knight. This is the will to succeed is important, but what's more important is the will to prepare. Our scripture of the day comes from Psalm 34:18. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted; He rescues those whose spirits are crushed. And this show is sponsored by Brentwood Baptist Church on 777 Concord Road, Brentwood, Tennessee, 37027. And also FCA.org, Fellowship of Christian Athletes. Donate to the Northern Middle Tennessee chapter or Southeast Middle Tennessee or Maryville, where Stevie Well led me to Christ at MTSU. And also neverthirst.org, where they bring clean water and the gospel to unreached people groups around the globe. And this segment is also brought to you by Jessica Nider. Her phone number is 615-521-5944, 615-521-5944. For Crazy Charlie, I'm Ryan Mudd. Till next time, saying so long, where you are loved and you are sent.
Miss you, Luther.
Is Mud.
My name is Mud.